Look, I've got to say, it's a morning ritual for me. First thing I do as soon as I get out of bed, big tumbler of water and a vitamin, multivitamin tablet, and then I'm set for the day. And multivitamins and supplements certainly have been in the news for the last few months, and especially over the last couple of weeks. And there's that old adage that all a multivitamin does is give you some very expensive whiz, and you're either for it or you're against it. So I thought we might have a chat to a gentleman who could shine a little bit more light on it from the University of Newcastle School of Biomedical Sciences and Pharmacy, Professor Peter Howe. Peter, good morning. Multivitamins and supplements, are they effective and do we really need them?
Good morning, Todd. Yeah, that's a challenging question. I guess in a perfect world with an ideal diet, we probably wouldn't. But the reality of it is that not all of us are able to access everything we need in the recommended intake levels in our food supply. And as we know, sometimes the goals seem incredibly high, like eating two serves of fruit and five of vegetables every day. I guess we ought to be looking at the quality of our diet in the first place and recognising that a lot of the processed foods that people are choosing because they, I guess, are appealing in terms of flavour, have a lot of fat and a lot of sugar, and are pretty lean on the goodies that we really need to get in our daily diet. So, it's a matter of choices, and I suppose for a long time we've actually been looking at boosting the intake of certain essential vitamins and minerals by fortifying foods. And I suppose, we've had more than half a century of fortified breakfast cereals with vitamins and minerals. So that's just one strategy has been, benefited generations of Australians now in order to achieve those ideal targets. So I guess popping a pill, a supplementary tablet or capsule is another way of addressing the same thing. Whether that's an appropriate way.
I was casting my mind back to when we first started taking multivitamins and when I was a child, and I'm trying to realise when was the time that we had them in the house when we first started taking them. I can't remember when. When did they really become fashionable?
For quite a long time. I think it's been a matter of availability and delivery of quality products and making sure that they're safe and available for people who deem that they require them. But I suppose a lot of people these days are looking at taking vitamin and mineral supplements as an alternative to necessarily having a rich and varied diet that can supply those things. So I guess that's a lifestyle choice, but possibly a questionable one. But for some things, we know that, it perhaps gives us a more reliable or guaranteed source. We know exactly how much we're consuming. For example, with the recommendations to achieve a certain intake of omega-3 fatty acids, we know that they come from seafood, but there's a lot of variation between seafood in terms of the quantities available. And in Australia, our seafood, apart from the, increasing interest in eating fatty, oily fish like salmon and tuna, a lot of our seafood is fairly low in fat content and therefore omega-3 content, because omega-3 is a kind of fat. And that means that if people want to ensure that they achieve a target recommendation, then they're probably more likely to be convinced that they'll achieve that by taking a supplement. And indeed, some of the recent research that's been undertaken here in Australia actually supports that. A study last year actually showed that there were five times as many women and men achieving their omega-3 target intake, daily intake, if they were taking a supplement, as to those who weren't taking supplements.
Peter, are all supplements created equally?
Well, one would hope so. I think that's one of the questions that's often criticisms that's often raised against the industry. But, you know, the industry standards and the regulations by our Therapeutic Goods Administration is endeavouring to ensure that, you know, what's on the label is what's actually contained in the product. But then you've got the further question as to whether what's being offered in the product is actually going to be delivering the benefit that might be claimed on the label. And that's another issue, of course, that's also been very much in the mind of the media recently. And I guess it's something that really does need to be addressed. You know, people who are out buying tablets and capsules to supposedly supplement their diet for specific benefits, and we know that there are conditions where obviously taking a supplement is going to deliver a specific benefit. For example, you know, the more recent introduction of lactase supplements for people who are lactose intolerant has been particularly beneficial. You know, we can identify a number of you know, specific applications. There are sort of you know, lesser concerns about you know, other particular supplements for example, lutein and zeaxanthin for age-related macular degeneration, etc. And we really do need a lot more evidence to actually back the claims for specific applications. And I think that's an area that does need to be addressed. And I think will be addressed. You know, up until now, the focus has been very much on the quality and safety of what's made available in terms of supplements to consumers. But we do need to be able to be confident about whether they're going to deliver any specific benefits that are being claimed.
Thank you very much for your time this morning, Peter. I suppose the rule of thumb is don't turn your responsibility over to the magic pill that is vitamin supplements. 26 to 11.